sit right down in the hot seat where the masters, you're the apprentice. Since you're here with us, let's all discuss the woes of being a dentist. 'Cause doctors Ernst and Etch are here to shed some light, peel back the veneer. So let's all have a blast on the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast. We're doing another hot seat episode with myself, Dr. Paul Etchison, and we got Dr. Henry Ernst here. What's happening, Henry?
Everything's good. No complaints, my friend.
It's good. Did how many of you listeners went and watched Henry's House Hunters episode after that in season 521, episode 1?
238, episode 1.
Not 520. You know what's funny is 521 season sounds ridiculous, but so does 238.
They both sound ridiculous.
I know. Like, I went back and I'm like, I put it in my phone after I listened to the episode when it came out. I'm like, I got to watch this. I'm like, is that right? Did he just say 238? I screwed up again, or is it 238?
No, you got it right.
It's 238. It's funny. Watch Henry go look at like multi-million dollar houses and then complain about a $12,000 closet they're going to put in one. What do you got to say about that, Henry? I want to hear your...
I have to watch out what I say, my friend. You know, I have...
That's what I thought, yeah.
We live in a very litigious country,
yes,
my friend.
Yes, we do. We sure do. All right, cool. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that. It's worth watching. My wife is a fan of Henry now. She hasn't listened to the podcast yet, but she's a fan of your family and stuff, so...
Usually everybody loves my family. My family, they're the stars of the show.
Yeah, that's how it is with my family, too. I think, like, on probably... almost 10, maybe 10 plus occasions in my life, people are like, I just don't get how, like, your wife married you. Like, she's so much like, and I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, no, like, you're a good looking guy. Like, you're really nice and stuff, but man, she's special. And I'm like, well, what, like, how do I know how to take that? That just means like.
That means that you and I both outkicked our coverage, as
we did.
They say.
We did. I think I deserved it, but apparently the gentleman's, I thought she did pretty well too. But anyway, okay, so we have got another Dr. John Smith on here. And we are doing these episodes. If you want to be on this episode, send me an email, dentalpracticeheroes@gmail.com. And we'll just put you on. You'll be on anonymous. We won't identify you. And we're just, or me and Henry are going to do a coaching session with this guy. So what's happening, John? You want to just give us an intro and just tell us kind of a little bit about yourself? Not too much, but like what's going on and what's relevant to your situation. And we'll just start picking it apart.
Hey, yeah. So first of all, thanks for having me on. I already listened to the first episode in this series. I graduated in 2020 from dental school. I live in the Northeast United States. I did a one-year GPR in the same area and got a lot of experience in all the classic GPR procedures. After that, I immediately started working for my dad in his practice. He's been practicing for about almost 30 years, and I was doing a couple days at his office and a couple days in another office. I've been doing that for the past 2 years. I've slowly increased my days with my dad's office and cut down my other associateship. So at this point, I'm Monday through Thursday there, and Fridays a different office closer to home.
So what is your long-term goal with working with your dad? Is he going to retire? Have you guys had that discussion? Like, what is, I guess, the boundaries or what is the game plan that you've already set up?
We haven't spoken in clear terms about timelines or what the exact plan is. He loves dentistry, loves what he does. He's really good at it. So he's not planning on slowing down anytime soon. Maybe in the last year or two, he's taken some more vacations and felt more comfortable that I'm in the office, but he's not cutting down days or anything like that. So retirement is not in the near future for him. We've both kind of expressed that the goal is some sort of partnership, at least at the beginning. And I'm sure that him, before I was even a thought in his and my mom's minds, he had a retirement plan in place and figured that the practice would be part of that. So I would imagine that when he does retire, there'll be some sort of buyout situation there.
Yeah, I always wonder, like, when you buy into your dad's practice, if it's like, it's got to be such like a fulfilling thing to sell it to like a son or a daughter. But then at the same time, it's like, I'm not giving you like that sweet of a deal here. You know, I was kind of counting on getting that full value. What do you think, Henry? What's your first thoughts?
Yeah. So are you the only other doctor besides your father?
I am right now. Okay. So over the years, he has purchased other people's offices. That's been kind of the model of his growth. He wasn't a startup 30 years ago. He bought a guy's office and he's done it five times since. So most recently, about 5 years ago, he bought out another guy, older guy, I mean, early 70s. The idea was that this older dentist would practice as an associate, so to speak, for however many years until he wanted to retire. And this was when I was in dental school, so that was kind of the plan, where when I came in, I would take over that batch of patients. And that's more or less what happened. The other guy stayed on probably a couple years longer than everybody expected, but it wasn't a problem. I didn't view it as a threat, and vice versa.
Sure. And then a couple number of ops, team dynamics, like how many hygienists you have and stuff like that, and maybe just some general numbers of the practice.
We were in an office with six ops, three hygienists, not all full-time. So Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we have all three there. Mondays, we have two hygienists, and Thursdays, we have one. So every day is a little bit different. We actually just moved offices, so now we're in a 10-op office, but we rent four of the chairs out. So it's still the six chairs.
What does that look like with renting four chairs out? Like, to who?
The space we took over, my dad doesn't own it. We're renting, and the space we took had, it was dental office already, and it had a renter in it taking two chairs. And then we came in, we didn't really need the eight chairs, so we found another renter for the other two chairs. It can get a little bit confusing, especially in the front desk, because everybody kind of needs their own space.
Patients
come in, they don't know who to look for. But most of our patients have been with us for at least 10 years, if not more, not counting new patients, of course. So when they come in the door, they know who they're looking for. That's the ops. Like I said, hygienists, Mondays, two. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, there's three. And then Thursdays, there's one.
In collections?
When this other dentist, so in the last 5 years or so, when the associate was with my father, they were probably doing about $6 million.
$6 million?
Yeah. We're in an urban area, very densely populated, so.
$6 million in collections?
Yeah.
Jesus. How?
Our prices are very high.
Jeez.
And the overhead is high. Over 60% overhead.
I was about to say, it's not what you make, it's what you take. And exactly. In an area like that, I would assume that the overhead's pretty high.
Huge. Yeah. Rent is really high. It's being offset a lot by these renters. That's another motivation for us to bring in people to basically fill the space, even though it's a little bit tighter now. But it really helps with the cost.
I'm just curious about this space rental, because I've never seen this. And actually, I'm hoping some listeners are thinking the same thing. They're wondering what I'm wondering. So you guys are in the same, like, office, but then, like, you guys utilize the same front desk, but different employees?
Correct.
Do you utilize the same, like, equipment and stuff? And, like, what else is, like, what's shared?
My father owns everything. The heavy-duty equipment, chairs, sterilization, x-ray unit, those are all shared. But instruments, materials, all that stuff, everybody's on their own for.
Okay. So that's what I was wondering. Like, if sterile gets backed up, it's like, dude, these renter people never do sterile. It's like when your buddy's got like a really messy girlfriend. Well, this is my experience. Your buddy in college, your roommate's got a really messy girlfriend that just practically lives there but doesn't pay anything. And you're just like, dude, she makes messes and doesn't clean them. That's what I would be wondering. So
she doesn't even live here.
Yeah. I know I'm not alone. I know you know.
One thing in my mind is putting things together, because I had a similar situation when I first started in practice. And I think it's really important to put your why, like where you see yourself and what kind of ultimate practice you envision having or being part of, as compared to maybe your father. Maybe he has a different one. I mean, real quick, when I first started out in practice, I worked in three different practices. One of the practices that I worked in was my father-in-law, who was a dentist. We have a great relationship. We still do. But you know what? His vision was different from mine. He wanted a practice that was all fee-for-service, and he had like a hygienist 2 days a week, and he had four chairs. He was happy seeing the patients that he wanted to, not really like an entrepreneurial spirit. And I was completely different. So I think one thing maybe you can articulate it here is, what is your vision for, forget about where you are now, but what's the perfect practice? What do you envision? And this way we could kind of reverse engineer any guidance that we can give to you.
Right. My vision, at least for myself as a practitioner, has been, and I know this has become a more popular plan for a lot of people, to do more, quote unquote, the super GP model, where I'm doing a lot myself. We have great referrals, but coming out of dental school and then residency, I really loved doing everything. I didn't want to kind of get stuck doing bread and butter dentistry because I owed it to, let's say, these referrals that we have to give them their due, so to speak. That's been my vision for myself on a practicing level. Long term, would I love to be a clinical dentist part-time and run more of a business part-time where I have somebody working for me? Yeah, that's never been my father's vision. He's always done everything himself, never had any interest in somebody working for him. Whereas I feel like I'd love to have the flexibility and kind of the breaking up the monotony of my weeks and my months with doing different things as opposed to just in people's mouths all day, every day.
The thing that's hard, I think Paul mentioned it really well, is I can only give you some of my experience. Like when I started my practice, I just wanted to have a true business where I could leave it for a week or two and it'll still produce income. That requires certain levers I had to pull along the way to go that route. Whereas if somebody wants more like a lifestyle practice, those are different levers also. So I also look at it from how Paul said, like, hey, if you're going to eventually take this over, it's going to be like a financial tug left and right. Like, obviously, he wants to get good value for it, but is it going to be a legacy where it gets left to you? And I think those are lots of considerations in your special circumstance.
I'm trying to like put myself in your shoes and think how I, because this is not something I had to go through. Henry, you have a little bit more personal experience having that kind of dual relationship of a father-in-law and somebody that you're working for. I wonder if it needs to be discussed at this point, but I think if you taking over that practice is something that you foresee in your future, then I think it's probably something it's worth discussing, I suppose. Not like you have to work out all the details, but like thinking long term here, because I know a lot of people that, and I see this with like new grads a lot, they'll call me and they'll say, what do you think of this practice? This landed on my lap and this is going on and this. And a lot of times it's not that great of a move. And I have to almost convince them, like, I know this just landed in your lap and it's easy because it's there, but is this really what you want? So I guess like a first thing that I would say is like for you ultimately thinking like, is this like where you want to be long term? And if so, then how do we start molding it into what you want? And also something that still works within your dad's boundaries. Like this is what, I mean, ultimately it's his practice right now. You might be ruffling some feathers, possibly. But what do you think about all that, John? What are you thinking as I'm saying all this stuff and you're hearing Henry say that?
It's definitely striking a chord because I came in over the last couple of years that I've started practicing with him. And also I've seen how a few other practices operate. I read your book a couple years ago, your first book. I've been listening to your podcast, Mark Costas, Bulletproof. All my commutes, anytime I have a couple minutes, I listen and try to get different perspectives on things. And so it's been difficult for me to see how our practice runs and know that my father loves his patients and he's got a great relationship with them. They love him. He treats them really well. But from a business perspective, is it working? And with the new generation of new patients that we're going to need to attract, is that possible in the current model that we use?
Yeah.
For example, right before I came into the practice, he bought us an intraoral scanner. He didn't really get my input on it. He just did his research and got his thing, whatever. It was fine. You know, that was his decision. But it was clear that he was getting it because I was coming in and he knew that I was doing some scanning both in dental school and residency. And I came in, it started out great, but then I realized if he had gotten my input on it, I probably would have chosen something else. And if we had talked about it and talked about how we were going to incorporate it into our workflow, we might have gone in a different direction. And the fact is, I'm the only one in the office who uses it. He doesn't use it. He has his way of doing things, and I don't need to change that. But it was on me to kind of train the staff on how to use it because they weren't really self-motivated, so to speak.
I guess you got two options here. And one is, are you going to go open up your own thing? And if that is it, then you got to discuss that with your dad. That's not going to make for a very interesting episode because for once, it's blank slate. But let's just assume this is where you're going to be for the rest of your career, and this is how you're going to take it over. So I guess, like, tell us, like, what are the roadblocks that you're having? What kind of things are going on that you wish were different, and what frustrates you the most about this practice?
It is, by the way, where I would like to be long term. Definitely relevant.
So you just check that off there. We don't have to go down that road now. Okay. Yeah.
Whether or not I want to own something else and pursue other things in addition, that's also a question. But this is where I want to be. I think one of the biggest roadblocks for me has been that most of the staff, and this is a good thing, has been there for 20 plus years. We have two staff members who have been there less than 10, and that's it. So while that's great because we've retained staff really well, and especially in today's market, it's really difficult to find people, they've gotten accustomed to certain practices and also comfortable in doing certain things. We're having a meeting next week for the first time since I've been there.
Whoa.
This includes any meetings, huddles, quarterly, we don't do any of that.
Oh, gosh.
So this is the first time since I've been there we're having a meeting, and probably the first time in 5 years.
What spawned that meeting? What was the catalyst for that? Was that you?
It was mostly me, yeah.
Okay.
We had a couple of reps come in, and they were talking about, oh, you know, you can work this into your system. And everyone's looking at each other like, system, what's a system? I realized, like, everybody's got to talk, and we got to be on the same page. I think staffing probably has been, and I love the staff. They know me since I'm a kid, you know, I'm a baby. But staffing has been the biggest roadblock in the sense that it's difficult to incorporate new ways of doing things, new systems, when people have gotten really comfortable in the old system.
Yeah, so you have a lot of parameters there. And I always kind of look at it like this when I'm helping people. In my experience of helping and coaching others, doing a startup, in my opinion, and maybe Paul will agree with me, is I think it's easier because it's a blank slate. It's a blank canvas. You create exactly what you want. This is going to be your home, your dental home for the long term. There's definitely a culture there that's already there and is already established. And it's going to be a strategy of you kind of tweaking the culture to get at what you want. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad or anything, but maybe there are some like, hey, this is the way we always do things kind of mentality. So in any big, large practice that's creating that much income, most of them that are successful do quarterly meetings, weekly meetings, yearly staff trainings and stuff like that. So the fact that you guys have been running like this without all that is pretty amazing to me. Mm-hmm. That's like an inherent culture that's pretty good. I think the strategy moving forward is going to be communication. I mean, just to sit down with your dad and say, hey, you know what? And it's all based on respect. Like, hey, dad, I really love the practice and everything. These are some thoughts. What are some thoughts that you had and I have that we can move forward together? And what does the long-term strategy look like? Right. So I don't think you're being like invasive and coming in there. You just want to talk about it. And that you're looking at any dentist that has somebody in place that wants to be there for a long term. We all welcome that. He's already got that. So I think my first action item would be something like that, just to at least get some communication going on what does this look like long term.
I agree with you, Henry, is that you want to come from a position of respect, definitely. Because, I mean, you respect your father. You got to respect this is his practice. It's ultimately been his practice. It probably was his practice maybe before you were even born. So it's like coming in and having this honest conversation with your father saying, hey, I kind of really want to have a practice this way, but I don't really want to step on your toes. And I think we should kind of just talk about what's cool. Because I don't know if you got pushback from this meeting, too. Because, I mean, people have been doing things. Hey, we've been here for 20 plus years. We ain't never needed a meeting before. I get this because I see this in coaching clients and it's often an acquisition. And typically, in my experience, when I've worked with people like this, everybody, when they acquire a practice, they want to keep the selling doc on for a number of months, at least a recall cycle. And what I have found is that the dynamic is very different when the other doctor is there because the team doesn't know who to look to for a leader. So what I think you need to hash out with your dad is like, what's fair game? What are the boundaries? Where is okay that I want to take this practice? Is it okay if we do this? Because if he doesn't give you the blessing and say, yes, this is okay, you're going to get a lot of resistance. And then the team's going to be not knowing where to look to for guidance. And like, who's my boss? Is it senior or junior? And you don't want to step on his toes. But then at the same time, your dad's staff and the people you work with very much respect your dad. They've been there a very long time. And I think if your father is cool with like, hey, I really want my son to kind of take the reins a little bit and make this place up to date for 2023, 2024, I think a public blessing is in order. I did this with my office manager when she transitioned from front desk to office manager. It was like, hey, everybody, this is the relationship, like defining the relationship, standing up and saying, Justine is now your office manager. It doesn't mean that I'm not your boss. It just means that she's going to take a little bit more role of leadership and authority in the practice. And she's going to be helping me do a lot of things on the back end with administration. So like defining the roles to the team, because I think without that, it, like Henry said, the communication is going to be the challenge. So tomorrow you're walking into this meeting. I'm just going to guess and say, well, do you know, are people kind of like, oh, why? Is it like that?
Actually, I found that most people are like, oh, finally.
Oh, cool.
But I think that they're saying it from a place of finally we can get off our chest or complain about what we wanted to complain about.
Yeah.
Which is great. But if that's the case, it's going to be a 3-hour meeting.
Right. Yeah. And it might be because you haven't had one in a really long time. But I think if everything vision-wise, like having your vision and finding where you and your dad's vision kind of overlap and there's continuity there, is expressing that to the team, this is what I want for this place. And I like to always phrase it as, this is what I want for the patients and for the people that work here. My thing is like, I always want this to be a great place for patients. I want to be a great place for everybody that works here. And I want to do a meeting so that we can communicate issues because we are all team and we can do things better. And I know we can provide better care if we communicate where we're all working together to solve these issues. So I want to have this constructive meeting and I want to do them regularly, like just kind of voicing that because this is out of the cultural norm. Like you're coming into a culture that's been very different without you. Like Henry, what do you want to add to that? Anything?
Yeah. So I love the fact that you kind of stepped forward and said, hey, this is a good idea to have meetings. My mentality is kind of like a mediator mentality. I have 4 daughters. I run a big practice. I'm used to, I would say this just to make sure it's cool. Make sure as this meeting's going along that you're kind of like walking that fine line. Don't let it be a 100% complain session.
Yeah.
Or else your dad's going to be like, I'm never doing this thing again.
Totally.
I'm a big fan of those humongous Post-its that they have that they sell at Office Depot. Maybe in the beginning of this meeting, like however you're planning on doing it, you can just say, hey, we want to just get everybody's input here to keep this practice a great practice, like Paul said, for the patients, for the team, and maybe just write some, hey, what are we doing that's positive that we should do more of? And just have somebody up there, just write them all down. What are some things that maybe we should be doing less of or things that we can improve on, right? And this is like borderline elementary level EOS that you're doing. And maybe you can hit a couple action items that you could, let's tackle these things, and why don't we meet again in a month? Mm-hmm. And let's come up with ideas. It's really successful when it's team-led. Because then you're going to get buy-in from, it's like politics. The team is going to buy in and say, wow, he wants us to come up with ideas to make our workplace better. And maybe you'll get a groundswell of support. And now when dad wants to hand over stuff to you, it's like we already look up to you because you're the one who finally gave us this freedom to allow our ideas come to fruition.
Yeah. Another thing to piggyback off of that is coming into the meeting with some ground rules. And this is all stuff you got to run by your dad before. Because like you said, it's like, you don't know, like, hey, dad, you cool if like I like stand up and kind of run this meeting? Like, will you say like, hey, my son's going to run the meeting today? Like, figure that out. Because like, if they're like, what's going on? Like, who are we supposed to listen to? But I always like to tell clients ground rules for meetings. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to discuss some things and we haven't discussed for a long time, but I want to talk about what's working and what's not working in this practice. But when we talk about what's not working, we are not blaming each other. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. It doesn't matter what you think whose fault it is. Let's just state the issues and let's just say, okay, maybe this is an issue. Let's find a solution together that works for everybody involved. Because I find most practices that have a lot of issues, it's almost like, well, this person's doing this, this person's doing this. And it's a symptom of just a lack of anyone declaring whose responsibility is what. But then a lot of doctors, owner doctors, want to sit there and focus on these tiny little issues, all these little things happening, when it's really like, what is the real focus here? What's the big problem? And the big problem is often just a lack of communication and a lack of clarity around systems and delegations and responsibilities and such. So what's going through your brain now, John, here and now?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the lack of communication, absolutely. And at the end there, you mentioned the word systems. Like that was another thing. I assume that the communication is the problem and the systems are a symptom of the problem where people don't know their roles all the time. You know, hygienist is supposed to clean the teeth, but outside of that, what is his or her role? New patients, what do we do when a new patient comes in the door? There should be a prescribed set of rules. There really isn't. Every appointment has to have a note with regards to billing, with regards to treatment, with regards to appointing the next visit. All that stuff, like none of it, whether it needs to be in writing or just at least at the beginning communicated to everybody properly, like that's something that we're lacking.
100% kudos to how you guys are running, and you're running, I think you're running pretty good where you are and your numbers, and there isn't systems and there isn't a leadership team or anything that in place. So I can only imagine the potential that this practice has.
Yeah.
And I think the main element here is the human element. We haven't mentioned it also, but what does the structure look like below your father? Is there a practice manager there? And if so, what's their role look like?
Yeah, so there's an office manager. To be honest with you, I couldn't tell you what her defined roles are, because she'll sometimes be at the front desk, she'll sometimes do billing. Of course, she manages the staff. That's one of her bigger roles. She does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work along with my dad in terms of managing the business side of it. That's about all I can tell you about what she does.
A lot of practices, in my experience, have the term practice manager, mm-hmm. but they're really not. Practice manager, somebody who oversees things, is basically the right-hand person to the practice owner, and they're usually the integrator of the operations team and everything like that. And they really just come to the owner when something like, hey, we want to do this. Is this okay? Yes. So I think that the blessing here is that, wow, there is a lot of potential if there are systems, but I think it's just going to be really like politicking to make sure that we walk the line with you and your dad. We make sure that everybody doesn't get insulted. We don't get this, like, why did we do this meeting kind of thing? And this stinks. We never did this before. But ultimately, for you, it has to be somewhere where this is going to be the place that you're going to be happy and you're going to do great and you're going to have a fulfilling career. Myself, just giving you just a little bit for me, my father-in-law and I have a great relationship, right? But his practice vision was different from mine. He had 5 chairs in his practice, had hygiene 2 days a week, and there wasn't room for growth. And I wanted to grow. So I just started my own practice, and I'm not trying to ruffle feathers, but that's what I did, right? And I grew it into what I wanted. And you're speaking my language when you're talking about being the super GP, the pseudo specialist, because that's what most successful people that are in large practices, that's what they do.
Well, here we are, and holiday season is among us. And if you are like me, who just dropped Delta and saw a 30% decrease in new patients recently, you are asking Santa for more new patients. So if you want more new patients, I got to tell you, Relevance Online Marketing is the best. They are who I've been working with. And if you want to see an absolutely beautiful website that they have created, you can go to their website or you can go to mine and look at my practice, nelsonridge.com. They just updated it and man, it is gorgeous. I've gotten compliments from patients on it. And if you want something like that, Relevance Online Marketing is for you. There is no contract. And if you mention that you heard of them on the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, you will get the first month free to try them out and see how it is. They will not hijack your site. You still own everything. You still have all your passwords to everything. And it's not like those other marketing companies, because I've been burned in the past, but I've been with this company for almost 5 years now, and there's a good reason for it. So if you want a marketing company that's going to work hard for you and do the things that you want them to do without you constantly telling them, Relevance Online Marketing is for you. Check them out at relevanceonlinemarketing.com. And again, mention the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, get that first month for free.
Yeah, and I'll add that in my associateship, one of the reasons that I wanted to open my own practice, I mean, I think I was always an owner, but I was taking courses and I was reading about practice management. And I remember trying to like, hey, I just learned this way. I think we should do it this way. And it was like, I didn't have the support. Not that I didn't have the support of the owner. I didn't have that blessing, as I like to call it. I didn't have that like, hey, I'll back you up. I think this is great. And I think there might be a chance that your dad is like, you know what? I love this stuff that you're talking about, and this is great. And I've always wanted this type of practice that runs smooth and has very clear cut systems. It's just not me to get it going. And if you want to be that person for this practice, I think that's awesome. And he might tell the team, hey, John's going to set this up and he's going to do this. And I think it's going to be great. It's going to make everybody else a better place to work. That's what I would hope. And a team that's been operating functionally like $6 million, my mind is blown with $6 million. You got to go back and check that. Just because that's like what my practice is doing. It's huge, you know? So, no, I believe you, but I'm just saying like.
Since I've been there, we haven't been. But when the old guy was there, there were 2 high producing dentists in a very fee for service, high fee area. Wow,
that's crazy. That's great. I love that. Yeah. So it's just a matter of where are you taking it? And for me, looking at an employee's perspective, this is what I wanted at my old associateship. And we had a meeting and it sucked and it got violent. Like it didn't get like throwing punches, but it was almost. People were standing up, people were pointing and yelling, and we never had another one because it was horrible. It was awful. And the reason it was so awful was because people just had so much pent up stuff. I got to think your dad's doing something right to have a team around that long. Like he's got to be addressing things, even though it's maybe not as structured as you would like it. Henry, what do you think about like the idea of
John going and sitting down and doing like one-on-ones with everybody. Do you think that's like an order, or do you think that would be stepping over a boundary?
I think that's not a bad way to do it. But I think, again, I would go to your father first and say, hey, this is my plan. I want to get input from everybody. Are you okay? You know, I think everything, it's kind of like the mafia, maybe. There's respect, right? You have to have respect. He should look at that as a good thing. Hey, you know, he's got the best interest of the practice. And I would totally agree with that. But I would also add to one thing. I think my main thing that keeps coming into my mind here is operations, entrepreneurial operating system is going to be a blessing for your practice. And you have to make it fun. I'll stress that because we still to this day make it fun. When we first did EOS, we were a few years in and the practice was going so darn fast. It was like starting to make me nuts. Somebody came in there and they did it just right. And they came up with the core values of the office, not me. They did it through the exercises. So whenever we have those core values, I can say the team came up with it to this day. Whenever we do a yearly meeting, we always go somewhere fun and I let them pick where we're going. We do it every January. This January, we're going to one of your favorite places, Paul, Nashville.
Ooh.
And it wasn't my decision. It was theirs, right? So they look forward to these meetings. Quarterly meetings, we do them like a good dinner somewhere and we just kind of reserve somewhere. So make it fun, keep the respect, and keep the communication.
Yeah. One thing, Henry, you mentioned before, how crazy it is that my father has been doing such numbers, but my motivation in having this meeting, let's say, and just improving communication overall and systems overall is growth. He's sustained these numbers, but if you look at our demographic, patient demographic, they're up there in age. I mean, most of our patients are above 60. So when I'm thinking about who are my patients going to be in 20 years, I have to think about how am I growing, and we don't do a lot of new patients. Before I came, there's still not really any marketing going on. Everything was word of mouth. We wouldn't really accept patients without a referral internally. But now I'm another dentist, and he's never had a second dentist in the practice, and certainly not for as long as hopefully I'll be there for.
So essentially what you're describing is a lifestyle practice, right? Before you were there, it's essentially a lifestyle practice. Lifestyle practice is like, hey, these are the hours, these are the days that we work. We're pretty much not accepting new patients because we're not going to keep growing. We're going to stay where we are and we're happy with it. And especially your patient demographics, those are the patient demographic age. They always need lots of work. And when they need lots of work, it's usually the expensive type work. So that's really good, but you got to look towards the future, right? This can't be a lifestyle practice continuing moving forward unless he either walks away or something else is done to get you your necessary volume that you want. And I'm sure from our conversation, it sounds like you're interested in growth.
Absolutely, yeah.
You want to boot the renter out. Like, you want to be like, we're busy. I don't need you no more. Get out of here.
I'd love to. If we get to that point, I'm in a good place.
We have so much volume at my office, and we have like a younger demographic. I'm envious of these older demographics where people just need stuff. I don't have a lot of 65 plus people. And I remember one lady, she was like 97, and I didn't even want to charge her. Having that older demographic, you could start advertising things like lifetime warranty. Like, I can't do that with four-year-olds, but I gave that 97-year-old. She got a lifetime warranty on everything. But same thing is like, I'm just kind of thinking it's like, you're going a different direction. You got to see where you want to take it. But I think likely people are going to be pretty receptive to it. And it's going to be good. And it's just always coming from a place of people want to work at a place with systems. They might be like, we didn't need this. And when I've had coaching clients that have taken over a practice and acquisition, because it's kind of, I guess it's in the same ballpark as what you're doing, but not really. Typically, the old guy's got to leave. I'm not saying you got to kick your dad out, but I'm just saying like they're changing a culture is the struggle that they usually go through. And the old guy's got to leave because everyone's looking to two people and doesn't know who to listen to. And the reason it's problematic is because those two people are not on the same page. The selling doc has done it this way for X amount of years, and now they sold, and now they're an associate. But that selling doc often does not step into that associate role. He or she continues to run the practice, and it causes problems. Now, you and your dad, you can make this work. It's just a matter of figuring out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think the action items for you, because there's so many levers that we can discuss about creating more patient avatars, younger patients, and doing this and doing this. There's so many levers. But I think right now that's all not in your wheelhouse right now. I think the main action item is having the conversation with your dad, And I would maybe sell it to him like this, slowly but surely. Like, my vision for you, Dad, is if you still want to practice and do what you love doing, how about we create it where I kind of run the systems, create the systems and the business, the leadership team, and you can just do the clinical stuff and take care of the patients that you love to do on a daily basis. How does that sound, right? It's all about politicking, right? You have to make it sound like it's not like changing a big change, because sometimes we get so used to things we don't want change.
Yeah, totally. And I think when you discuss, like, your dad's going to say, hey, what do you want to do? And I think it's got to be like more of a conversation of like, you know, this is kind of what I want. What do you think of that? Rather than saying, I think you should. Because when we say, I think you should, that's an immediate way to get somebody defensive. Like, why should I do that? Who the hell are you to tell me I should? You know, it's like, no, I would like if we do this. I think it'd be cool if we did this, rather than I think you should be doing. So that's my 2 cents on that.
Yeah. My first year or so working there, I hesitated really to say anything because I was like, you know, this new doc coming in, doc's son, well, who does he think he is? Then year two, I was still, you know, a little bit uneasy about it. That's kind of the crossroads I'm at, where it's like, how much do I assert myself versus do I have to take a step back because I'm still the noob, even amongst all the staff and, of course, my dad. So
This is a good analogy too. We have 5 docs in our practice. And I always tell younger associate doctors or any associate doctor, you're essentially a practice within the practice. I want you to create a practice within this practice.
I love that.
Want people, like if I open up Open Dental is what we use, and there's a pop-up that says only Dr. Ernst, right? That's awesome. That means that you did such a great job that this patient only wants to see you. And then what's going to happen is that's going to filter down to the family members. The husband's going to say, oh, I want my wife only to go see this doctor. So what that means is, obviously, you have to take good care of your patients. Also, don't forget this. Always try to get lots of reviews in your name. In your case, you're going to need your first name, right? Hey, you know, and there's lots of systems that we can discuss. Maybe that goes beyond the boundaries of this call, but techniques you can use to get reviews. I would try to get, like, with the amount of work you're doing, amount of days you're working, at least 1 good review per day, 5-star review. If you do that for a month, people are going to start to notice and take notice, and you'll create that practice within the practice, and you won't do the, I'm doing air quotes, the young doc, right? You'll be the respected doc.
Yeah. Do you ever get like, oh, look at him, he's doing a filling, I remember when he was just this small. Did you ever get one of those before?
I get that from patients all the time. Not so much the staff, but all the patients.
I say that to like my nieces, and like every time I say something like that, I just cringe. I'm like, I never wanted to become that person. Like, oh, I remember you when you were this small. I'm turning into that man.
You can't fight it.
Henry, what would you say? Like, so he's going into this meeting tomorrow. Where would you start? Like with a non-systematized practice, where is the easy low-hanging fruit that should get easy buy-in and get a little bit people feeling excited about it?
Them showing momentum. And actually, I would say this. Let me take it back. Just them knowing that you value their input. I'm not saying that their input wasn't valued, but by specifically writing it down and doing the technique that I said before, there's lots of different, but for this kind of meeting, my technique would be, with your father's blessing, if he's okay with you leading this meeting, just standing up there and saying, we have a great business. We take care of people really well. We want to improve things. And I just want to know, and I want to get your feedback as great employees. And I would do that technique where you just write down positives, start with the positives, and what can we do more of? What are we doing great at? And then maybe here and there splice in the, what can we do better? What should we be doing less of? And maybe with that beforehand, Paul said, you know, hey, these are the rules of the meetings kind of thing. And this way, just try to come up with some solutions and maybe try to find the easiest things that you know that can be fixed. So this way, between this meeting and the next meeting, you'll have that problem solved and they can see this works.
Let's say we have an hour for the meeting, something like that. And I have a list of 3 or 4 things that needed to be addressed kind of on an emergency basis, so to speak. Would you still say I should open the floor to input from everybody in that manner that you were saying, Henry? Or is it more like, oh, why don't you guys talk to me after, like on one-on-ones after?
I want them to feel like it's not dictatorial, like you're not being a dictator.
Yeah.
You're kind of being a peacemaker. And what I would do is I would throw your own in there. Right. And while there's maybe 1 or 2 right now, oh, by the way, this is from me. I think, you know, blah, blah, blah. So this way, it's not coming from a one-person thing. It's coming from the whole team thing. Is this going to be done during lunch or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So are you guys going to do lunch for the team?
Yeah, we're going to get food.
Food always helps, yep. I don't know what you think, Paul, but I think my opinion is I would have my little notes of things that I want to make sure get put in there. And I would kind of throw them in myself here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you leave yourself enough time to have them, let them come up with ideas. Okay, well, let's circle the most important ones, right?
Yeah.
How can we fix this? And let them come up with the ideas. Because you know what? If they come up with the ideas and you try it, they're going to own it more as opposed to if you just tell them, we need to do this.
And this meeting's going to have a culture component that comes into it. And it might be like, well, I hate it when Sally does this. And Sally's like, I know, it's your fault. It could have that. Or it could be like, hey, what do you guys think? And it's crickets. And you don't know what this dynamic's going to be like because this has never happened before. My suggestion would be to go in and say, like, stating the vision. This is what I want from this. This is my intention. This is what I want from the meeting. And then just starting with like, hey, this is what I think is a big issue. Or just saying like, hey, what do you guys think is like one of the bigger issues here that we can talk about? And then asking for like, what do you guys think? Like, does anyone have a solution? And you might get crickets. And if you get crickets, you just pick somebody that you like and you look at them and you say, what do you say, Lauren? What do you think about that, Lauren? And hopefully this will start to initiate a dialogue. How big is this team?
We are 9.
You're a great size to have like a meeting where to open the floor mm-hmm. to everybody. Yeah. I think when you get to like 15, it starts to get problematic.
When we have our quarterly meetings, we have about 40 people, 45 people in the room. So there's no pressure on people. I always love this saying. If you get crickets in the room when you come asking for ideas, I love this saying is, hey, listen, the worst thing that can happen is we try something and it doesn't work. We tried it. But trying something is a step in the right direction, right? You learned. It wasn't a failure. You learned. So I think they should all understand and use that phrase. This way, there's no pressure. Oh my God, I made this choice to do this and it didn't work. It was a failure. It wasn't a failure. We learned from it.
Yeah. What is the biggest issue in your opinion that you want to adjust at the meeting?
The biggest issue, it's funny because the meeting, I'm trying to solve the communication issue. And I think that's also the biggest issue where people are not on the same page about what their roles are. It's pretty much everything from a systems perspective, billing, patient experience, patient handoff, all that stuff. So I don't want it to become like this whole dialogue or monologue rather with me telling everybody that this sucks, everything that we do sucks, our patient experience is terrible. But at the same time, I think we have a lot of improvement to do in the systems area. And that's been my motivation. But I do like the idea that you guys are suggesting where rather than me telling everybody what is going wrong and what we should be doing differently while also sprinkling in some positive things, it should be more, how do you guys feel about the way things are going?
And I think there's an element of it that there is no right or wrong answer to a lot of these things and a lot of these issues. It's not like, hey, who's right, who's wrong? It's what can we come up with and all agree to? What can we get agreement on? And this always makes me think of the idea that I had to sit down at the front desk. I don't know why I had to do this, but it needed my intervention. People were showing up late. And they're showing up late. And so, hey, guys, it's upsetting some people that people are showing up late. Is it okay if we show up late? Yes or no? What do you guys think? I'm like, I don't care. Whatever you guys want. And they're like, well, no, we don't want people to be late. Okay, well, what's late? Well, just as long as you're not like too late. What is too late? Is 15 minutes too late? This is like what we had to go through. And what's funny is we got down to like, you could be like 10 minutes late if you're okay, if it doesn't happen too often. Well, what's too often? And they're like, well, I don't, just not all the time. And I'm like, well, guys, let's all get on the same page here. And then it was, okay, it's 10 minutes. You could be 10 minutes late occasionally, which I was, whatever, unless you get stuck by a train. Because we got a lot of trains by us and it happens. What we ended up with is 10 minutes is okay. And if somebody is late too often, you are to come and tell me about it and I will address it. What's too often? It's when somebody's upset enough to come talk to me about it. So that's, you got all these individuals and personalities in the same room, and there's so many things that they might think is an issue, and they might agree that it's an issue, but they have different like expectations about what the solution is to the issue. And like I said, there's no right or wrong. It's a matter of moderating this discussion, getting to a certain point and saying, hey, can we all agree on this? Are we all in agreement that this is how we're going to do these things? This is okay. Is anyone not in agreement to this? And hopefully you get some buy-in. And like Henry said, this is, you're moderating this discussion. They are creating the solutions. One question I love, like when people say like they're given options of what we can do, is saying, what else? What else is there? Is there anything else? Any other solutions? Any other possibilities? Because I think it gets people to think a little bit more and come up with things and articulate it. And I think, yeah, I think that's great. So,
yeah, this comes up in our weekly meetings when there's an issue or a problem. Once you have leadership meetings that are on a weekly basis, they're going to discuss, hey, we've got this problem that pops up. And that's the value of weekly meetings. You don't let a little problem turn into a big one. Whenever that little problem comes up, the first thing that my integrator who leads the meeting says, well, what do you think we should do? And they come up with solutions. While I was thinking here, there was a couple things that I thought of. Is definitely, assuming everything goes well and you have a good conversation with your father and stuff, I would say within the next 6 to 12 months, you need to implement EOS into the office. That is going to be a game changer. One of the things that EOS does is something called an accountability chart. That sounds like something that's very needed in your office. An accountability chart is something anybody can go to at any time, and it's basically like a flow chart that can tell you whose responsibility is this, whose responsibility is that. Right now, there's probably people wearing multiple hats.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that came up too in my head is, I don't know in your office if there's any like personality issues with, it sounds like if people have been there that long, it doesn't seem like there is personality type issues. Because there's exercise for that too, but I don't think you guys need that.
I think you should go into it, Henry, because everyone's like, well, what is it?
As we grew, we ran into some times where there would be personality conflicts and cliques in the office and stuff like that. I learned this from a mentor of mine. We do, once in a while, we still do it. It's called the trust exercise. I feel like we do it once a year. So you sit in a room, and again, everything's going to be for the greater good of the practice. We're going to say some things here today that are going to be honest.
So framing it.
Nobody's feelings are going to get hurt. And what you do is you write down everybody's name on a piece of paper. Everybody has a piece of paper that has everybody's name on it. And so if Paul, what are three things about Paul that Paul does that Paul does great or Paul should be doing more of? What are three things that Paul should be doing less of or he should stop doing?
I don't want to hear the answers to that.
Well, we do this every year. And I have to be involved in the hygiene one, the front desk one. I'm involved in all of them. Then what you do is you have these big post-its that are on the wall and somebody's writing down, Paul, and everybody goes around the room. And let's say something comes up multiple times, like 5 times. Paul needs to talk more. He needs to, you know, or something like that. At the end of the exercise, each individual looks at their list and they say, okay, I'm going to commit to do more of this and do less of this. And we kind of keep people accountable because we come back in about 3 months. Maybe at our next quarterly meeting, say, hey, 3 months ago, Paul committed to do more of this and doing less of this. How's he doing? And I think that it kind of makes people accountable because they're like, my teammates are saying, 7 of them are saying, I need to stop neglecting sterilization or whatever that looks like. And then this way, you can kind of iron out things and people are accountable without hurt feelings.
We used to do anonymous surveys. And then I used to sit down with everybody and say, what are they doing well? What could they work on? And I would sit down. I wouldn't tell anyone what they said, but I would sit down and go through this with everybody, what they need to work on. And funny side note, there was one time I'm not going to say her name, but I just said to her, I said, hey, I'm going to say something to you that a few people wrote and you're just going to say, okay, and we're going to move on and we're not going to discuss it. And she's like, yeah. I'm like, people say you walk up to the front desk and you fart and everyone smells it and they know you do it. And she goes, what? And I'm like, you're supposed to say, okay, and we're just going to move on. And it was just like, I could see that causing conflict. What about that, Henry? Like that doesn't, people aren't like trying to figure out like who said this about me?
There's no hiding. That's why it's called the trust exercise. We're all being trustful for the greater good of the office. Mm-hmm. And this stemmed from, we had an issue. This was years ago where we had to fire somebody like instantly because they were harassing people and they were doing lots of bad things. It created a lot of turmoil, right? There were people that were really close friends with this person and it created turmoil and it created cliques. These people were upset this person was fired. And after like a month or two, there was definitely some feelings that needed to be ironed out. Like I said, a mentor of mine gave me this exercise and said, this is what you need to do. And actually the first time we did it with our EOS coach and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since then, we got such value out of it that we do it once a year now.
So is this something where you walk out of this meeting, you're like, oh, that felt good. Or are people walking out like pissed off?
Yeah.
Like who said this? I'm going to figure it out. Like
it's not what you think. No. You walk out of there and you're relieved. And I'll tell you something funny is I had the same things that people said about me, that people were intimidated by me. Like some of the younger employees didn't want to come up to me because they were intimidated by me. And so I made a sign. I had one of my team members who does this on as a side hustle. I think I had a sign made that said, "I am Dr. Ernst. I will not bite. I will be helpful. Please ask me for help." And I have that on the front of my door to this day. It's kind of a joke, but yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me like, hey, sometimes the younger employees are intimidated by big, bad Dr. Ernst.
They are. I get the same thing. As I get older, like the younger employees are they're scared of me, and I'm not scary.
You know? So to answer your question, I know we're getting off tangent, but basically it is a kind of exercise in an office that if it's never been done before, you actually leave there and it's like doing a cold plunge. Maybe when you're nervous about going into it, but when you get out of it, it's just, wow, that felt good.
Is there a censorship to this when you're pulling these post-its out? Like, is there certain things you go, I'm not going to read that?
No. We say them out loud. There's no censorship.
What if somebody said something like egregiously horrible? You're like, that's never happened?
So that's important in the framing ahead of time. The first time we did it, I was fortunate because the EOS coach did it. But he did the same thing that we do. We say, we're going to come up with things in the practice that, like I said, this person, maybe if they're doing this, too much of this, they can do more of this. And I think the positives really come out really well because a lot of times people say, Paul, he's always got a big smile on his face. The patients really love him. And I think he needs to do more of spending more time with the patients talking. He doesn't spend as much time. You know what I mean? Like,
is it do more of or what they need to stop doing?
It's three do more of and negative things that they're doing, and three do less of and not do.
I'm scared, John. Are you scared?
I don't know how that would go over.
I want to try this, but I'm just... I think this is next level culture.
This is like way past where you are, John. This is, but this is something that if there is,
I'm not going to lead with that.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah, no. If, but kudos, like you've had people that have been there a long time, so you probably don't even have these issues. This is something that can maybe be done like a year from now, once EOS is implemented and you're really got the trust and everybody sees the value of the structure and the meetings and stuff like that. That's next level.
Yeah, I picture you like pulling these out of the hat and you try this tomorrow and it's like, I think Dr. John should shut the fuck up and get the hell out of here. You know?
I'll be like, all right, see you guys.
Yeah. Perhaps.
I'm done.
We're coming up on time, man. Anything else you want to kind of just get asked before we close it up?
This is a whole other conversation. I would love to at some point talk marketing for a person in a situation like mine. Like I said, we have always done word of mouth, referrals internally. Given the demographic and geographic location that I'm in, I don't know where to start.
Go, Henry. Take us home, buddy.
So first off, for you, we already talked about, we already hit it home a lot, where you need to go first, and it's all internal for you. Marketing-wise, I think one of the things that we always did is we defined our avatars. What are our typical, like our three most common patients? And it shouldn't just be one group. It should be multiple groups. In our office, we've got the older retirees. We've got the soccer moms who in our office love to come in the evenings and on Saturdays. We also have your sedation patients who love to come because we offer sedation. So I think that you need to figure out what your avatars are. It sounds like for you guys, it's, hey, our older patients that are loyal. So you definitely have a lot of potential because you're not even farming out for new patients right now. And you have so much potential, even just the low-hanging fruit of just getting the typical new patient. But I think defining the avatars really worked for us because then we figure out what really worked for us and we just keep hammering home. And I always love the fact, and I talked about it on the last podcast, is find out what your competition does. You said there's a lot of competition. Find out what they're doing. Find out what makes them all pretty much the same and try to establish something different. And that's the total low hanging fruit because it's going to stand you out besides everybody else.
Mm. Yeah. Love that. All right. Thanks so much, John. Thank you, Henry. If you are thinking about working with Henry or myself, go to www.dentalpracticeheroes.com. It's more information on the coaching programs that we offer. And if you are interested in being a guest on the hot seat, please reach out to me, dentalpracticeheroes@gmail.com.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Ty Hardoon with Colorado Surgical Institute. Dr. Brisky and myself have really enjoyed doing these podcasts with Dr. Etch and talking about everything clinical. So keep your guys' feedback coming. It really helps us curate what we're going to be talking about on the podcast. If you want to learn how to do live patient surgeries and actually do the work yourself with the guidance of Dr. Brisky and myself, come out and see us. We're in Northern Colorado. We're just north of Denver, and we can have you do anything from single implants to wisdom teeth to IV sedation to oral sedation, bone blocks and GBR, and sinus lifts, vertical and lateral, and full arch with the whole digital workflow using photogrammetry, 3D printers, mills, and all of the above. So we're here to help. Reach out to us. You can call Chris Richards, our director, at 970-420-6148, and he will definitely have a hero discount for you guys because we love Paul and we love DPH.